York City. It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting video streaming live from our studios in New York City. I'd like to welcome you. Today, you're going to find how to eat your way to good oral hygiene with an anti-inflammatory plant-based diet. Who says? University of Freiburg, which is in Germany. And we have a lot more coming on health and healing, living a longer life. Then I'm going to share a commentary by Chris Hedges. I'm also going to share a commentary that I have incorporated along with that on why we're not paying attention to the basics. Many of our rights and freedoms are being censored, limited on Facebook, on Google, and misinformation shared with us on health issues and body politic on Wikipedia. What should we do about it? What can we do about it? Is it too late to make any fundamental changes? Do they have that much power? We'll discuss it. The one issue that is getting some attention today is the burning of the Amazon. There have been more than 73,000 fires in the Amazon in the last year, and those are human-made. Why? Can we do anything to lessen that devastation? Because it impacts everyone on the planet. That's open for discussion, and I'll be asking you to share your points of view a little later in the program. Also, why you should be watching today's program, and you can watch by going to Progressive Radio Network Facebook, is because we're going to be showing you today, time permitting, a BBC documentary on 5G. From around the world, listeners of this program are sending me photographs of how every tree on a street has been cut down so that it doesn't interfere with the signal for the 5G transmissions. And now you're able to see, just walking around New York City and other cities, you're able to see the 5G towers. In some places, they're actually disguising them. But they're there if you look. Do we need this? No, we do not. Is it dangerous? Yes, it is. Why isn't our government telling us about this? Well, they're part of the problem. And we're going to get into that. Also, for those of you who have thought, gee whiz, I mean, some of the language we're using today, some of the words like, you know, I feel threatened by what you're about to say. Now, how do you know what I'm about to say? Well, there might be something what you say that causes me, as a 19-year-old or 25-year-old, 34-year-old, depending upon my parents' influence, me make me fear for my own existence. Wow. So who best to challenge this? Well, I'm going to give you one guess. He would be banned on every college campus in America today. George Carlin. Because George has a unique way of just eviscerating pretentiousness. And we're nothing but a pretentious society today. Pretending to know things we don't. Caring when we don't. Sensitive when we're insensitive. And yet everyone self-righteously identifying in some way with what they believe is right and everyone else is wrong. So George is going to set us all straight. You'll see that a little later. It'll be fun. And also we'll be taking, time permitting, some calls from the audience on our line. Now let me give you these numbers. Again, these are important because you never know when you're going to be out and about and you think, well, I got an hour. Let me go to the archives and download one of Gary's shows if I missed it. This is also the time of year where people are frequently away on vacation. Good for you. You deserve it. And you want to catch up. So I'm going to give you the numbers. The number to go to our archives is 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. But if you just want to listen live, that's easy. Our listen live number, 605-562-7900, 605-562-7900. And why do I keep giving you different numbers about every month? Because there's so many people coming on, they have to keep extending the bandwidth and giving new numbers. Let's begin with the latest on a plant-based diet. That's a healthy diet. Is good for your overall well-being. We know that. In fact, we just heard yesterday from a sampling of individuals, and not that many, but enough for you to get an idea that both those who are suffering from depression and anxiety and loneliness and a lack of clarity and meaning in their own lives, maybe a crisis has happened, maybe they got fired from a job, maybe they retired and realized, wow, I still want to do stuff, I just don't want to retire and hang around. Or maybe their children are gone and they have that emptiness syndrome. For whatever reason, a person is going into this state of, you know, life crisis. In just 4 weeks, actually 3 weeks of actually doing stuff, people were able to turn all that around. Some have been in therapy for 30 years, one guy said, and yet he got more in 3 weeks than he got in 30 years of therapy. So that's good. And then people with really debilitating diseases were able to turn those diseases around in just 3 weeks. 3 weeks. And by the way, we'll be following up on them because I gave them both protocols for the next 6 months. Mind you, what I do every day on this program is simple. I plant seeds of consciousness. When you become aware of consciousness in your own life, when you expand out of fear, insecurity, uncertainty, guilt, and shame, and then you open yourself up to something new, you have all those things there to bud and grow, just like a sprout. And by the way, that's one of the reasons that in workshops, at least in retreats, I like to give people sprouts and say, here's a tray, here's soil, now sprout. For the first 2 days, they don't see anything. On the third day, the sprout comes up, and then it just grows. And within a week, they're harvesting and eating something that they grew. It's the little things in life that make a difference. Tending the things that you feel joy in, that you were part of the implementation of. That's what this program's about. So anyhow, we advocate for a plant-based diet on for everything. Well, now, according to the peer-reviewed Journal of Clinical Parentology, whole foods diet rich in fruits and vegetables can improve your oral health and naturally reduce the symptoms of gingivitis. And this was a randomized trial. They took a group of patients with gingivitis, and the participants were randomly given an experimental diet and a control diet. And the control diet just ate their normal food, but the experimental diet, they had no animal proteins, no processed foods, all healthy and rich in antioxidants and fiber and the omega-3 fatty acids and the plant nitrates and vitamin C and D. And they did this for 4 weeks. Those in the control group, there was no change. But all those who were on the plant-based diet saw remarkable improvement in their oral hygiene. Plaque values of the two groups were measured. Those in the plant-based, plaque was reduced. So they also lost weight and they felt better. If you want healthier oral hygiene and less bad breath and gum disease and bleeding of the gums, a healthy plant-based diet. And then just take a teaspoon of raw organic coconut oil and put it in your mouth and swish it around. Ideally for 60 seconds, and then you spit it out. That's pulling, and hence coconut pulling, that's pulling out the toxins and their strong antibacterial and antiviral properties in coconut oil. And then you can brush your teeth with it. It's very good. Separately, a new study suggests that exercise is good for the aging brain. Now, this is a little complicated. In fact, I just got off the phone with the head of a research laboratory. It's going to be doing all of our blood chemistries. And I ask, are all these necessary? I didn't select any of the blood chemistries. They selected all of them. And they're paying for those blood chemistries. Thank goodness, because they're about $22,000 per person. Very expensive, because the uniqueness of what we're studying at the cellular level. In any case, one of the things that I suggested was, how do you know the actual age of where you start to age, I mean, really get old? And the person was suggesting it was in their 60s. And I said, no, 27. From 27 years of age, chronologically, and on, you're actually in an aging state, meaning everything is going downhill from there. And depends upon what you do that it slows down versus speeds up. You know, I've seen people at 50 who looked 80, and I've seen people at 80 who look 50. It's what you do that makes a difference. But actual aging of the brain and the body, 27. So those of you who are in your 30s and 40s thinking, well, I got plenty of time. Remember what the Buddha said, you have no time. So in this study, researchers find a single bout of exercise boosts cognition, memory performance, and this was at the University of Iowa. So exercise, it just endows you with a wealth of benefits, from the release of happiness-inducing hormones to higher physical fitness, less body fat, more energy, greater cleansing and detoxification. And the new research shows it also boosts your mind. And the researchers found that a single bout of exercise improves the working memory if you're older. And that's important, because without a good working memory, in fact, I just opened and read a handwritten letter from one of our audience members today about he's working with a woman who works in the mental health field, and she's about 85, and she speaks five languages, and they're saying that she's losing her working memory, and that's an excuse for her to be let go. And the person wanted to know, will I help her? And I said, sure. You know, she still has cognition, we can improve it. But think of all the people out there who are suffering from the beginning of dementia and forgetting. And by the way, one of my good friends that came out in the paper for half a century has been Peter Max. In fact, every single day that when I was in New York and he was in New York and he wasn't touring with his art, I wasn't out doing films, he would drop by the office, 10 o'clock exact. He'd walk up the steps, come in the office and sit down. And we'd have about a half-hour conversation, maybe get together later and have dinner. And he would tell me all about what was going on in his life. And then, of course, with his dementia and all the problems he was having in his marriage, I haven't been able to see him because he's got this custodial situation where nobody gets through. And I sent a letter to his son and daughter saying, I can still help him. I can bring him back, bring that memory back. Haven't heard a word from him. That's unfortunate. Not surprising, but it's unfortunate. But I did meet Joe, and Joe has been his runaround buddy, taking him out wherever he goes. Very nice man. And I said, Joe, ask him. It could be as simple as giving him a drink. And in that drink, I put everything that he needs. So all I asked to do is drink. And then he said, well, you got to go through this torturous process to do anything now. And that's because the state has influence. And when the state has influence, it's like someone coming to me say, Gary, my mom just, you know, she's in the hospital. She has this. And can you help her? I said, not in the hospital. Hospitals won't take any of my advice. They won't change protocols, even if the protocol they're using is not working. And one of the biggest tsunamis that we're facing today is loss of cognition and working memory. And that can be reversed. We've done it time and again. But institutions don't change for the better, ever. And I'm more than happy to challenge any, including Sloan Kettering and their pediatric ward, who think, oh, you're doing a good job. No, you're not. In my opinion, you should be held accountable and only work there if you succeeded. If you're working for decades at a place and all your patients are dying, you should not work there. But we don't hold those measurements. We do not hold people in our lives to high standards, and we should. Anyhow, this study showed that exercise can improve memory, and that's a good thing. This was from the Department of Psychology and Brain Sciences at the university. So get out and exercise all the time. Even if you can just barely start at the beginning, you build from there. Now, there's a study from Johns Hopkins University And it's about a high-fat diet, especially during pregnancy. It actually slows the learning in your offspring. This was a laboratory study. So in a bid to further explore how mother-to-be's diet may affect their offspring's brain health, Johns Hopkins Medical researchers found that pregnant nursing rats fed high-fat diets have offsprings that grow up to be slower than expected learners and that have persistently abnormal levels of the component needed for healthy brain development and metabolism. So, mothers who are pregnant, stay away from just eating anything and only have healthy fats. The healthy fats are coconut oil, flaxseed oil, hemp seed oil, avocado oil. Those are the good oils, and olive oil. This was published in Experimental Neurology. And you can measure the same thing in humans and come up with the same results. I just wanted to share that with you because I thought, you know, how many people are right now listening who don't have a knowledge of healthy versus unhealthy fats. Also from Erasmus University Medical Center, which is in the Netherlands, you can help prevent dementia with a healthy lifestyle. What do I mean? I mean, seniors, there's a recipe for preventing dementia. Eat a healthy plant-based diet, exercise vigorously, and don't smoke or don't drink alcohol. And that's according to this new study that shows how memory-robbing diseases, where a person can look all right on the outside, and they can remember things from the past. They don't know what they had for breakfast. They used 6,300 adults, 55 and older. And by the way, 55, because in the Netherlands, you're really a senior at 55. In the United States, it's 65. And we just added five, and I haven't even spoken to Luanne to see if she got any calls, but we're taking five people who are 50 and older for our new anti-aging study, which is a 90-day study, 60 days in residence and 30 back at their home. But we're doing a massive amount of scientific analysis of a person's body at the objective level, studying their genes. And so people don't realize you have high-risk genes. And then if you have those high-risk genes, according to this article in Nature Medicine, you can't stop dementia. And they're right. They can't. And all the other neurologists and psychiatrists and internists cannot stop it. I believe it can be stopped. How else can you explain 9 years ago when Kenny, a plumber, had end-stage multiple sclerosis so bad he couldn't walk up the steps? We had to literally carry him up the steps and carry him down the steps. Today, and for the last 8 years, he has been completely free of all multiple sclerosis. He had two sets of neurologists, and the best they could do is tell him which medications he could take to lessen the pain that he'd be feeling and to put walking barriers in his house, like railings, and then railings on his bed. Well, today, he's a happy, dynamic person. How do you talk about myasthenia gravis being reversed? How do you say it's not possible? How do you say it's not possible when a woman who is on her way to an assisted living center for Alzheimer's because she couldn't function is completely functional? There's a young man, maybe listening today, his parents are probably listening, the Ortegas, to a wonderful couple, by the way, very proactive. They were both New York City police officers. One had to work night one day because of Jonathan had advanced autism. Until following the protocol I gave him, he's completely 100% normal. Not only is he normal, he's doing extremely well in college. And how do you say that happened? You say it's spontaneous remission? Okay, let's say it's spontaneous remission. But it wasn't spontaneous. It took several years. And Kenny's took 16 months. So how do you explain it? Do you have any spontaneous remissions for Eutrice Leeds end-stage cancer? None of the doctors, oncologists, her brother, a physician, in a hospital, in the recovery room, in critical care, looked in the lungs, sewed them back up. You got a couple weeks to live. How is it she's alive today, 6 years later? How is it that 3 months later, she had dropped 100 pounds, normal blood sugar, normal blood pressure, and went out and thinking she was going to be a spectator watching a state championship because it was held in the same town where she was staying, got her in the race and she won a gold medal. Is that a spontaneous remission? Sooner or later, we the people are going to get in the face of the medical industrial complex and let it know you no longer have a right to assume you know best what is for my body or what happens in my body or mine is your exclusive domain to critique. And all they can say is spontaneous remission. Yeah. Nothing spontaneous about it. Anyhow, just understand that there's a lot you can do to protect your brain and your body and change the DNA, because we know that words, the tone of our voice, our intent can change our DNA. It's been shown. So the people you're around, the nature of your relationships, the quality of your diet, the environment you eat in, how you eat, whether you're rushed, it's you're taking a quick lunch and you're gobbling down something that's not healthy, and you're tired, you pick up a pizza at home or have it delivered, that's not helping your DNA. Mindful living will. What is mindful living? Conscious that every choice you make will have an outcome. If you want to know what the results are going to be of your choices, don't wait till you get to your destination. Be aware of every day. You're putting mindful intention into everything you're doing. That can change the DNA. And we're bringing in Shyam Bhatnagar. Now, I've known Sean a long time. There are photographs of him and I up on my website from the mid-1970s over on WMCA. And Sean's going to be doing a workshop every day on sound, breathing, and chakra rebalancing. And he is the one who brought that to the United States. Anytime you hear the word chakra, it's because of Sean. And he's still going strong at 84. By the way, he'll be participating in the study as well. It'll be kind of fun. So just remember, if someone says that you can't change, they're right. If you believe you can change, you're right. Which right do you want? Because there's going to be a radically different outcome. Finally, how zinc fights infection. University of Adelaide. And they found that, this was published in PLOS, pathogens are in the body. We have bacteria, we have cancer cells, we have viruses, and it's a balance. Everything that we do every day helps maintain the balance towards health. No one is ever free of bacteria. You couldn't be. You have 10 times more bacteria in your body than you have cells, but it's the health of those bacteria. And if you're being conscious in the choices you make, in the environment you're in, the water you drink, the supplements you take, the friends that you have, the relationship you have, all that impacts your DNA and your immune system. Have you ever noticed that when you get in an argument, there's a fight, there's something stressful, the next day you might come down with a sore throat or a head cold? That's not by accident. Now we know that zinc has an ability to fight off bacterial infections. And zinc deficiency affects 1/3 of the world's population. And you're going to be far more susceptible to the bacterial infections if you're deficient in zinc. You don't need a lot of zinc, maybe 20 to 30 milligrams a day. But if you take that in that zinc, you're strengthening your immune system and you're helping fight off staphylococcus and other causes of pneumonia. It makes a difference. Something that small can make a big difference in your body. So that's the latest on health and healing, and I will have more tomorrow. I'm going to be doing a discussion tomorrow on NAD and NADH, the redox, and how it impacts Alzheimer's disease. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll go right to the clip on George Carlin. I think you'll appreciate it. Back in a moment.
It's worse with every generation. For some reason, it just keeps getting worse. I'll give you an example of that. There's a condition in combat. Most people know about it. It's when a fighting person's nervous system has been stressed to its absolute peak and maximum, can't take any more input. The nervous system has either snapped or is about to snap. In the First World War, that condition was called shell shock. Simple, honest, direct language. Two syllables. Shell shock. Almost sounds like the guns themselves. That was 70 years ago. Then a whole generation went by, and the Second World War came along, and the very same combat condition was called battle fatigue. Four syllables now. Takes a little longer to say. Doesn't seem to hurt as much. Fatigue is a nicer word than shock. Shell shock. Battle fatigue. Then we had the war in Korea, 1950. Madison Avenue was riding high by that time. And the very same combat condition was called operational exhaustion. Hey, we're up to eight syllables now. And the humanity has been squeezed completely out of the phrase. It's totally sterile now. Operational exhaustion. Sounds like something that might happen to your car. Then, of course, came the war in Vietnam, which has only been over for about 16 or 17 years. And thanks to the lies and deceit surrounding that war, I guess it's no surprise that the very same condition was called post-traumatic stress disorder. Still eight syllables, but we've added a hyphen. And the pain is completely buried under jargon. Post-traumatic stress disorder. I'll bet you, if we'd have still been calling it shell shock, some of those Vietnam veterans might have gotten the attention they needed at the time. I'll bet you that. But it didn't happen. And one of the reasons is because we were using that soft language, that language that takes the life out of life. And it is a function of time. It does keep getting worse. I'll give you another example. Sometime during my life, toilet paper became bathroom tissue. I wasn't notified of this. No one asked me if I agreed with it. It just happened. Toilet paper became bathroom tissue. Sneakers became running shoes. False teeth became dental appliances. Medicine became medication. Information became directory assistance. The dump became the landfill. Car crashes became automobile accidents. Partly cloudy became partly sunny. Motels became motor lodges. House trailers became mobile homes. Used cars became previously owned transportation. Room service became guest room dining. And constipation became occasional irregularity. When I was a little kid, if I got sick, they wanted me to go to the hospital and see the doctor. Now they want me to go to a health maintenance organization. Or a wellness center to consult a healthcare delivery professional. Poor people used to live in slums. Now the economically disadvantaged occupy substandard housing in the inner cities. And they're broke. They're broke. They don't have a negative cash flow position. Broke. Because a lot of them were fired. You know, fired. Management wanted to curtail redundancies in the human resources area. So many people are no longer viable members of the workforce. Smug, greedy, well-fed white people have invented a language to conceal their sins. It's as simple as that. The CIA doesn't kill anybody anymore. They neutralize people. Or they depopulate the area. The government doesn't lie and engages in disinformation. The Pentagon actually measures nuclear radiation in something they call sunshine units. Israeli murderers are called commandos. Arab commandos are called terrorists. Contra killers are called freedom fighters. Well, if crime fighters fight crime and firefighters fight fire, what do freedom fighters fight? They never mention that part of it to us, do they? Never mention that part of it. And some of this stuff is just silly. We know, we all know that. Like on the airlines, they say they want a pre-board. Well, what the hell is pre-board? What does that mean? To get on before you get on? They say they're going to pre-board those passengers in need of special assistance. Cripples! Simple, honest, reverse direct language. There's no shame attached to the word cripple that I can find in any dictionary. No shame attached to it. In fact, it's a word used in Bible translations. Jesus healed the cripples. Doesn't take seven words to describe that condition. But we don't have any cripples in this country anymore. We have the physically challenged. Is that a grotesque enough evasion for you? How about differently abled? I've heard them called that, differently abled. You can't even call these people handicapped anymore. They'll say, we're not handicapped, we're handicapable. These poor people have been by the system into believing that if you change the name of the condition, somehow you'll change the condition. Well, hey, cousin, doesn't happen. Doesn't happen. We have no more deaf people in this country, hearing impaired. No one's blind anymore, partially sighted or visually impaired. We have no more stupid people. Everybody has a learning disorder. Or he's minimally exceptional. How would you like to be told that about your child? He's minimally exceptional. Oh, thank God for that. Psychologists actually have started calling ugly people those with severe appearance deficits. It's getting so bad that any day now I expect to hear a rape victim referred to as an unwilling sperm recipient. And we have no more old people in this country. No more old people. We shipped them all away and we brought in these senior citizens. Isn't that a typically American 20th century phrase? Bloodless, lifeless. No pulse in one of them. A senior citizen. But I've accepted that one. I've come to terms with it. I know it's here to stay. We'll never get rid of it. That's what they're going to be called, so I'll relax on that. But the one I do resist, the one I keep resisting, is when they look at an old guy and they'll say, look at him, Dan. He's 90 years young. Imagine the fear of aging that reveals. To not even be able to use the word old to describe someone, to have to use an antonym. And fear of aging is natural, it's universal, isn't it? We all have that. No one wants to get old, no one wants to die, but we do. So we both. I started pulling myself when I got to my 40s. Soon as I was in my 40s, I'd look in the mirror and I'd say, well, I guess I'm getting older. Older sounds a little better than old, doesn't it? Sounds like it might even last a little longer. Shit, I'm getting old. And it's okay, because thanks to our fear of death in this country, I won't have to die. I'll pass away. Or I'll expire like a magazine subscription. If it happens in the hospital, they'll call it a terminal episode. The insurance company will refer to it as negative patient care outcome. And if it's the result of malpractice, they'll say it was a therapeutic misadventure. I'm telling you, some of this language makes me want to vomit. Well, maybe not vomit. Makes me want to engage in an involuntary personal protein spill.
George Carlin. Now, just a few things that are important from the science research. One third of pre-approved prescription drugs have not completed the FDA approval process. That's according to the Institute for Operations Research and the Management of Science. And so the Food and Drug Administration, they accelerated the approval program, which was created back in 1992, simply to significantly accelerate the ability to bring certain new drugs to market. New research to be published in an upcoming issue of Informs Journal talks about this. A large number of drug manufacturers are failing to complete the approval process, meaning a significant number of drugs on the market today are not fully approved. And that is terrible. That means we, the people, end up as guinea pigs. Now, yesterday, Johnson & Johnson had to pay a $500+ million fine to 6,000 people in the state of Oklahoma. But there have been 400,000 deaths minimally attributed to opiates. And these were the manufacturers of the opiates. Now we find out, and it came out in trial, and the documents they got in discovery, that these manufacturers had known all along, and had any competent and conscientious physician known, that these opiates are killers. And especially at a time when, in all of alternative medicine, one of the biggest gains that we've had is natural, non-toxic ways of dealing with pain. You mentioned cat's claw. You mentioned capsicum. You can look in the scientific literature, and there's studies validating this. So on the one hand, if we have a large number of studies validating a natural approach to a condition, and we have the synthetic, highly toxic pharmaceutical drugs, and it's 99.99% the pharmaceutical drugs that people use, then what does that say about the control that those who are profiting from those drugs have over the medical paradigm, from the teaching in medical schools and who selects the curriculum and what's getting emphasized and to what's advertised on television? When was the last time you saw capsicum as a capsule, which is cayenne pepper, at a high heat unit, suggested in any advertisement for pain? And yet it's one of the best things in the world for pain and thinning the blood and increasing circulation to the brain, which could help a lot of people who have poor circulation. You don't. So just understand that what they saw yesterday is just opening the floodgates to what will be tens of thousands of lawsuits. But who is held accountable for 400,000 deaths from just one type of medication, the opiates? Nobody. Nobody's going to lose their license. Nobody's going to go to jail. Companies that manufacture it, knowing that it was dangerous, will pay a fee, but they get to keep all of their ill-gotten gains. Just imagine that. But that's the reality of the world we live in. Separately, and by the way, also it was shown that federal scientists in the United States warned of coming opiate crisis when? 2006. The Surgeon General was on the verge of alerting the public about opiates, and 13 years ago. Well, why didn't he? Because the effort quickly evaporated, and there's no real answers to why. Politico said that two of the government's top scientists detected the first signs of the emerging opiate crisis back in 2006 and tried to warn health officials and the public of the coming catastrophe. That's according to the documents obtained by Politico. But it didn't lead to any real action at all. And the death toll just kept climbing and climbing. Till today, it's over 400,000. And that was obtained through a Freedom of Information Act. And by the way, through the National Institutes of Drug Abuse and the National Institutes of Health. Just so you know, the people in power, including the U.S. Surgeon General, knew the dangers and didn't tell us. What does that tell you about the integrity of people in power? So that's where we're at today. And we have found this almost for Vioxx that killed 60,000 people. Nobody went to jail. Corporation didn't lose its charter, paid a fine of $5 billion, and got to keep $12 billion in profit. So paying fines is the cost of doing business. We should allow them to pay fines. We should take away their charter to do business so they have to go bankrupt and they can make no more profit in the future. And we have multiple Freedom of Information Act requests out right now. Multiple. And when these documents pour in, wow, are there going to be a lot of lawsuits? You bet. So I'll give you a heads up on that. I'm going to share some insights now from Chris Hedges, and I'm going to share some insights of on my own about what we're seeing now. And Chris calls it the curse of moral purity. It's in Truth Dig. And isn't it interesting that Truth Dig, along with Consortium News and Global Research and all these wonderful, honest publications that tell us the truth about important issues, are all being scrubbed clean off Google. In fact, just today I looked at over 100 sites, legitimate sites, not quack sites, legitimate sites. They're 99% no longer can find anything about them. In fact, if you Google something on health, it immediately takes you to a pro-pharmaceutical, pro-big medicine website, more often than not, Wikipedia. And we have a piece coming up on Wikipedia that I think you'll find interesting. I have a whole series of pieces coming up. In fact, I'm going to ask Jesse to get our piece ready on Wikipedia, and it should be here. In any case, when you look at our country's inability to understand the power of a political and ideological position, the consequences of it, let me give you an example. Right now, we have fires in the Arctic. We have no more sea ice around for almost 400 miles from going out from Alaska. We have fires in Greenland. We have fires in the Siberian areas, and the boreal forests are burning. The biggest fires in the world right now are in Africa. You don't hear a single word about it. I get a chart each morning from an environmental organization that shows us the number of remarkable or unique weather events in a given 24-hour period. You have more fires in Africa, not a word. And we've had fires in South America before this latest one in the Amazon. Thousands. We don't pay attention to them. Now, why are those fires there? Because when you go into a McDonald's or a Burger King, where do you think the meat comes from that you're about to eat? We got the meats. Do you also have the moral responsibility to say, maybe we shouldn't tear down the rainforest to the point where it cannot regrow, to the point where a carbon sink becomes a carbon emitter? No. The people who go in there have disconnected themselves from conscious and ethical responsibility. They're just hungry. They want a cheap meal, and it costs the rainforest to give them that meal. Now, it will hurt their heart and their health and their colon, their pancreas and their breast, all susceptible to cancer from the estrogens. They don't care about that. Remember, the people who are conscious are not eating meat. The people who are not yet conscious are going to eat whatever they want, and they're not going to be health-minded about it. So how can you expect a world to become conscious of what's happening and try to stop it by their own personal sacrifices when we're not willing to even be conscious of the people we're voting for? And the biggest disappointment for me, a lifelong liberal and humanist, is what has happened to the total degradation of the liberal democratic establishment. They can't address any of the ills besetting the country's climate change. Why? Simple. Unregulated global capitalism, mounting social inequality, a bloated military, endless foreign wars, out-of-control deficits, gun violence means the inevitable snuffing out of our anemic democracy. You'll say, yeah, but there's Bernie Sanders. Yeah, Bernie Sanders sold out his soul when he told his followers, who were young idealists, vote for Hillary Clinton. He knew what kind of demonic person is Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton and the entire thousands and thousands of people they have in permanent positions of power in every industry that would be protected had she been elected. But she wasn't. And he then sold out. And he sold out on a lot of other support of the military-industrial complex. He's very good, and I support his values when it comes to social change in the United States, helping student get rid of student loan and not supporting the military budget now. But he supported that military budget. Now I believe he's doing it because it's a positive group that he wants to influence, and that would be the younger ideals. And I believe there's going to be a split right up the middle. Don't think that Elizabeth Warren is an idealist. She's a liar. And everyone of color should be very concerned what she did. She lied about being a Native American to take a very valuable position at Harvard as its first minority woman in the law as a professor of law. Think of the other people of color or even Native Americans who have a background in law who should have gotten that position and didn't. And yet, suddenly, that's off the table. Can't discuss it. Why not? Why not her to support unbridled support for Israel? Support Israel, but it also support the idea that there should be an ideal where coming together for a peace, a two-state solution, where there's no apartheid, there's no walls, people living in harmony together as they once did. She won't have any of that. So be very careful about who's calling themselves you know, progressive. Neither of these are progressive. They're liberal elites, and they've jettisoned genuine political life and retreated into self-defeating moral crusades in a vain and futile attempt to deflect attention away from the looming social, political, and economic and environmental catastrophes. And yes, we are going to go into economic catastrophes. Probably not until right after the 2020 election. But right now, if you're honest, you'll see that the entire economy of the world is crushing under unpayable debt. European Union is bankrupt. It spent $3 trillion to give to banks, major corporations. Didn't help. Now they're giving them $57 billion a month in quantitative easing. It won't help. And yet the economies are shrinking. China's in a debt crisis. India's in a debt crisis. United States is the most indebted country in the world. And yet no one is looking at that. We look at select industries that are prospering. Yeah, if you were given hundreds of billions of dollars that you could then buy back your own stock and increase the value of your existing stock, which makes your company look very good as an investment. But the whole consumer demand is shrinking. So we're not being honest. And everything's been pegged to the dollar simply because all the other currencies are so weak. That's going to change in the next year and a half. So those who have got all their money in equities, boy, what a foolish move that is. Or bonds, even worse. In any case, now the language of the left and the right have bifurcated the country into warring factions. Opponents are demonized as evil. Adherents to the cause are on the side of the angels. Nuance and ambiguity, according to Chris Hedges, are banished. Facts are manipulated or discarded. Truth is replaced by slogans in identity politics. Conspiracy theories, however bizarre, are incredulously embraced to expose the enemy. For example, Russia controlled the outcome of our election by hacking into the DNC. The Russians never hacked into the DNC. That was an inside job by a man named Seth Rich, who was so angry at what he saw the Democrats' establishment doing. So Bernie Sanders, who would have beat Trump easily, he would have beaten Trump. And we would have had a really good chance at a progressive. I thought it would be great to have Jill Stein be Bernie Sanders' running mate. That would have been a great ticket. She's a really progressive. He is somewhat progressive. On social issues, he's certainly progressive in the United States. Didn't happen. So if you're wondering why Trump is president today, in no small measure it was because of Clinton and the corporate Democrats and the corporate liberal establishment and all the corporate media. And they've been lying ever since. And hence nothing constructive has been done that helps we the people. Mind you, politics is defined by antagonistic political personalities spewing vitriol. The intellectual more sterility, along with an inability to halt the forces of social destruction, provides fertile soil for extremists, meaning neo-fascists and demagogues, who thrive in periods of paralysis and cultural degeneracy. Liberals and the left have wasted the last 2 years attacking Donald Trump. Let Trump destroy himself. He is more than capable of doing that. Put your resources into doing something constructive for the working class, the poor, the inner cities, our infrastructure, nature. We're not doing that. No, the left desperately needs scapegoats to explain the election of Trump as president. No different from the right wing that tars its Democratic Party enemies as American-hating socialist and that blames Muslims and immigrants and the poor people of color for our national debacle. As bankrupt as that concept is, so too is this competing cartoon vision of the world, where people foster a self-created universe of villains and superheroes that exacerbates the mounting polarization and rage. We look at us as what we're seeing is a bourgeois society. Now, I hope that you take the time sometime to read Christopher Latch's 1979, The Culture of Narcissism. Boy, is it good. it's spot on for what we're experiencing today with the crisis in capitalism, and it's reflecting a general crisis of Western culture. We are falling back into neoliberalism and to the type of mindset that Louis XIV, the Sun King, had. And I'm going to go into great depth in a talk next week about what it meant to be a courtier at the court and how that's no different than being a consultant, a hedge fund manager, an equity partner in today's world. Everything is about greed and self-aggrandizement. So that's what we're looking at today. We're not looking for the truth. We're looking at a justice system that is multi-tiered. If you're very rich and very powerful, you never have to worry because you bought the agencies that could prosecute you and put you in jail. You've bought the legislators who could condemn your actions. So that's what we're faced with today. And neither party represents the people. They represent themselves. Greedy, the elite liberals. And by the way, I know some of those elite liberals. In fact, a very close friend for many years, who I helped become a national champion from non-athletic at all, Franco Pantone, and I worked with this person. They wanted to be a national champion. They did the work. They deserved the title. And then there was that one day when there was a fundraiser, and I saw these very famous liberals there to vote, to support Hillary and Bill Clinton before they were president. And it was all about power. They would get power if they supported them. They didn't like the Clintons. They already knew about them. That's the way it works. Now, quickly, I'm going to do this. It'll maybe run a little bit longer, but this is our latest article. It's entitled Wikipedia, Stephen Barrett, and Sweet Suicide. It's by myself and one of our in-house counsel, Amy Mitro. And it's this. It's short. It means that millions of people throughout the world, after decades of consuming an American-style diet, which is unhealthy, are starting to pay attention to what they're putting into their bodies. Finally, there's a conscious questioning movement. Is our diet safe? Now, the five items that people generally consume, which have been scientifically proven to cause disease, are sugar, meat, pesticide-laden foods, saturated and trans fats, and refined carbohydrates. Unfortunately, if you go to Wikipedia to become educated on disease prevention, you're going to be getting information that is not accurate. And part of the reason is that Wikipedia editors get their information from one Dr. Stephen Barrett. As a result, Dr. Barrett has an enormous influence on people's health choices. So we decided to examine Dr. Barrett's actual claims in his writing and compare those claims with the state of peer-reviewed science published on PubMed. Now, this is just the first of multiple reports, about 50 reports coming at you. The first report covers sugar. In his book, Health Robber, Stephen Barrett states, quote, sugar has been subject to particularly vicious attacks, being falsely blamed for most of the world's ailments, end quote. He also states, quote, there is no evidence that sugar increases the risk of developing heart disease, end quote. And, quote, sugar is not the cause of obesity, end quote. Regrettably, for people who choose to believe him or the editors who use him as a source, he was wrong, terribly wrong. The article posted on PRN.fm contains just some of the existing peer-reviewed literature showing sugar as a cause of both heart disease and obesity. One study, The Sugar Industry and Coronary Heart Disease, a historical analysis of internal industry documents. This is in the Journal of the American Medical Association, Internal Medicine, 2016, tells us that, quote, early warning signals of the coronary heart disease risk of sugar, meaning sucrose, emerged in the 1950s. Okay, that's one. And the authors examined Sugar Research Foundation's internal documents and historical reports and statements relevant to early debates about the dietary cause of coronary heart disease. And we learned that the sugar sponsoring people who did this project in 1965, when you do a literature review in the New England Journal of Medicine, it singled out fat and cholesterol as the dietary cause of coronary heart disease and downplayed the evidence that sucrose, meaning sugar consumption, was a risk factor. Singling out fat and cholesterol and downplaying evidence of sucrose consumption, why? Well, it's a matter of historical fact now that this sugar group set the review's objective and contributed articles for inclusion and received drafts of what was being written and published in New England Journal of Medicine. Yet the sugar funding and the role was not disclosed. The doctors they were paying, the scientists they were paying, the sugar industry was paying scientists to do their work. The author suggests that policymaking committees should consider giving less weight to food industry-funded studies and include mechanistic and animal studies, as well as studies appraising the effect of added sugars on multiple coronary heart disease biomarkers and disease. In addition to evidence that sugar increases the risk of developing heart disease and obesity, sugar also puts people at risk of type 2 diabetes and cancer. A sampling of these studies is also posted on PRN.fm. These are all peer review articles from PubMed, the official place where people who want to know the best science can go, and is officially sanctioned. So the conclusion is this. I'm only mentioning just a sampling of the peer review literature. There are hundreds of studies on this topic. These studies show that consuming too much added sugar increases your risk of weight gain and can lead to visceral fat accumulation, increases heart disease risk factors such as obesity, high blood pressure, and inflammation, and that high sugar diets have been linked to an increased risk of dying from heart disease. So Stephen Barrett's statements on sugar demonstrate that he is wrong and grossly biased, as is any literature using him as a source, including Wikipedia. And by using him as a source, Wikipedia may be contributing to heart disease, obesity, diabetes, and cancer. So, Wikipedia and Jimmy Wales, do you want to take responsibility for all the people who have been misled by your misinformation from not objective and biased sources, who ended up dying because they felt there was no other way of helping themselves except through the orthodox approach? That's a question for you. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for watching and listening, and have a nice day.